Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Day 180 served up by Wendy's. The 1 o'clock hour is here, and every Tuesday at 1 o'clock, that means John McClain joins us. And the big storyline nationally right now involves the NFL. It involves LeSean McCoy with a tweet that's circulating through a friend of his girlfriend's. And again, these are just accusations at this point, with different statements being released from all different sides here. Chad, you described the picture as not safe for work. I agree. I mean, it is a brutal photo of showing a woman who's been beaten up, busted up,
it's
black eyes, bloody. And the accusation is that LeSean McCoy had something to do with it. He has denied that. And BSO is reporting that McCoy had been trying to get his girlfriend to leave his home for over a month. She refused and even called the cops when he tried to get her stuff out of the home. They were supposed to be in court today to have it settled. This morning, an ambulance came to McCoy's residence because his girlfriend had been assaulted. Her friend on Instagram accused McCoy of doing it. A second friend believes McCoy sent goons to carry out the attack. No police report has been filed yet. And it was also reported that McCoy was not present during the assault or robbery. That from social media as well. Again, a lot of information packed on social media through the NFL feeds. If you use hashtag NFL, it'll all pop up for you. But I haven't seen a ton of stories on this. There's been some paragraphs written, but not a lot of detail yet as things begin to resurface with all of this. But scary nonetheless with this photo, regardless of what happened to her.
Yeah,
it's horrific.
It is a horrific story. If it's true, the allegations, horrific. And it's a terrible story if it's not true. If this stuff is fabricated about LeSean McCoy, it's a terrible story all the way around. And you're right, Hutton, the new news here, we talked about this earlier, is that there's a second accuser, I guess a friend of the first accuser, saying that it wasn't LeSean McCoy that beat this woman up. He had buddies go to her house and pistol whip her. That's the new accusation put forth by a second person.
John McClain joins us. You can join him at 615-737-1045, our number. John, how are you?
I don't know if you've used this, but the woman who went public with the picture put in that tweet that he beat his kid, he beat his dog, used steroids. She said, you know, for whatever. Now, if he beat his kid and they didn't report him, then what does that say about them? And, you know, there's a lot of people saying don't rush to judgment. But if somebody did indeed go over there and pistol whip her that he hired, you would think they had security at that house. Players in multi-million-dollar houses have security cameras. And if they catch those guys, they're probably 3 or 4 time losers who'd roll over on him like crazy. And if it's true about LeSean McCoy, it's the second worst thing I've seen by an NFL player to rake root. Having his pregnant girlfriend murdered, shot while she was driving. And of course, he's still in prison after being convicted of that.
Well, and it's this is not a first strike against LeSean McCoy. He had the bar fight incident in Philadelphia. He's had some other issues pop up during his time in the NFL. So something to keep in mind.
Well, there'll be investigations by the Bills and the league, and you know, the league will get all those. We'll get all our investigators on it, and with security cameras, with other people supposed to have been there. You know, I'm guessing, looking at her face, there's probably somebody else's DNA on her body, DNA in the house, unless they use gloves. But this is just one of the ugliest stories you could possibly have. And if people tweet LeSean McCoy, that picture's there. And it's just horrific. It looks like she'll have to have her face reconstructed in plastic surgery.
Well, and a weird offshoot of this story, this is the same woman that that back in 2016 on social media, this was July of 2016, Marcus Vick, Mike Vick's little brother, on social media accused LaShawn McCoy of giving her an STD when they were dating. This was the woman that apparently Marcus Vick was dating at the time, saying that she was chasing money and got an STD from LaShawn McCoy. And this is now the same woman whose friend is making this accusation. Strange story all the way around. Terrible story all the way around.
John McClain with us. You can join him at 615-737-1045. Our number coming up, we'll get his top players at each position on offense under the age of 26. The idea, trying to be around the first contract status. Some of these guys maybe have extensions, maybe not, but the young players. I want McClain's top young players in the league. We'll do that coming up, but we welcome your phone calls.
Yeah, now's your time to talk to a legend in NFL circles. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle can talk about your favorite team, any story across the league. If you want to talk about this LaShawn McCoy, we can do that. Ask about your favorite team. You can talk AFC South also with John McClain. Whatever you want to discuss, now is the time to give us a call. 615-737-1045. 737-1045.
John, what do you make of the NFLPA filing that grievance against the anthem policy today?
I think maybe it had to, because it's supposed to represent the players. You would think the owners would be smart enough to know then when they instituted a policy like that unilaterally without consulting the players, that they would be on firm ground. They believe that they don't have to have that as a part of the collective bargaining agreement. Now, you would think that, but the players, you know, they file a grievance. I don't know if it goes to an independent arbitrator or what, but it just calls more attention to an issue that I think probably 90% of the players in the league wish would go away.
Their take on this is that the policy is inconsistent with the collective bargaining agreement and infringes on player rights. So that's what they filed today. I don't know how the timetable is on these things, or will be on this. We're less than a month away from preseason football.
Yeah, the policy came in March. You know, what took them so long?
I know.
To decide to do this.
Yeah, maybe they actually thought this through. Unlike the NFL owners, who didn't even vote on it. It didn't sound like.
No, they did an unofficial show of hands. And almost everybody was for it, so they said passed.
I just don't understand.
They've done before.
John, this is it's such a big issue right now. Whether we want it to be an issue or not, it's an issue. It's a controversy in this country. I don't see how an unofficial vote with a show of hands is the way to go on something this big. And to make something so vague with the policy, it was a mistake by the league also.
No, they blew it. They blew it. Just, it was amazing how many people you can have who are multi-billionaires and people who are supposed to be really smart, and they have lawyers and they have advisors, can make such dumb decisions.
John McClain is with us. Let's go to Adam, who goes to the front of the line for calling in to talk with John right now. What's up, Adam?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, John, man, I love hearing from you, man. It's awesome. It's good to have you on the show, man. You're great.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, man. I'm diehard. I've been diehard since right when we moved from Houston to here, and I don't understand why we're being hyped so hard this year, because I love them, and I pray to God it's the first football season, the full football season I'm going to get to see in almost like 15 years. So I'm excited about it, but, man, I think with Vrabel, there's going to be a lot of growing pains that people aren't really discussing, that they're just excited because he's young. And so am I looking at it the wrong way? Should I be on the other side of the fence? But I'm trying to think, realistically, we haven't beaten Andrew Luck ever. Deshaun Watson put up 50 against us. The Jaguars are really, really good. And we got a new coach, man. How am I supposed to be looking at this?
Well, thank you very much for calling. First of all, I believe that barring serious injury, that three teams from AFC South go to the playoffs. And I say that because I think that the teams are good. I think the Texans are going to compete for the division title with the injured players back in Deshaun Watson. And I heard Charlie Weiss this morning on NFL radio say that he went over the best offense in each division, and he picked the Texans because of Watson and their receivers. And I think there's no team in AFC East going to the playoffs other than the Patriots. AFC North, Pittsburgh. I don't think Baltimore, Cincinnati, or Cleveland's going to the playoffs. And AFC West, Kansas City or San Diego. People are picking San Diego. I wouldn't pick a team that doesn't have a home field advantage. If any other team in the league had to play games in which they didn't have a home advantage, would you pick them to go to the playoffs?
I wouldn't.
I don't think so. And they do not have a home field advantage, again, because of ownership. So whoever wins that division, I don't think anybody else is going. That's why the Jaguars, Titans, and Texans, and they ought to be picked in that order, I think will all go because I think this about Jacksonville. And the reason we're all picking them to win the division is they got the farthest. They went to the championship game. They scared New England in Foxborough. But here's why I would doubt them. They had one serious injury. How are they going to – what are the odds Jacksonville's going to have one serious injury again? How would the Texans or the Titans or the Colts have done with one serious injury? And that's why I think that they're – I don't know that they're going to have a lot, but they're going to have more than one. I think it's going to be a really good division with great competition. I can't wait to see how it plays out. But anytime you have a new coach – there's always, especially when he's first-time head coach, you want him to prove himself. There's going to be a modicum of skepticism until he does prove himself. And Mike Vrabel knows, no matter how much former coaches and players praise him and say they know he's going to be a great head coach, he knows he's got to prove it. And there are growing pains that a first-time head coach has to go through.
We've been mentioning throughout the show that McClain today brought his starting lineup of NFL players 26 years or younger.
This is his offensive starting lineup?
Offense. We'll do defense on Thursday with John, who will join us on Thursday this week, not Friday. But, John, let's just start with quarterback. This is a fairly easy decision for you, it seems, for the young quarterbacks.
First of all, Chad, is about midnight, and I get a thing from Jonathan saying I want you to pick team players in the first year of their contract who are 25 or younger. And I texted back, I don't have any clue, and I'm not going to look it up about contracts. So I got intrigued by the age. So this is not 26. Anybody 26 doesn't qualify.
Okay.
This is 25 or younger.
Good.
And I did look them all up, and it's amazing how many running backs, wide receivers, defense backs. There's a shortage of offensive linemen because they haven't played a lot. And one that I picked is just drafted this year. And, the quarterback is Carson Wentz. That seems to be a no-brainer based on what he's accomplished in his first two seasons.
So, John, you just caught Hutton at his prime time. Those are his peak hours, like 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. He's ready to go.
John's the only one awake. I can text.
Yeah, it's true.
I just don't get quite requests like that at midnight.
I didn't ask if John was awake. Hey, you up?
Yeah, no, I'm always awake.
You out?
I'm not thinking about contracts.
I'm with you on Wentz, though. I think that was a fairly easy one. What?
Did you also send him a Twitter DM instead of a text?
Yeah, I'll just DM you next time. I'll pop up in your DMs, John.
Anything after 11 p.m., John prefers Twitter DMs.
I'm not looking at Twitter, so I prefer text. That's true.
I'm curious about your running back selection because you have a lot of options with good young backs right now.
Yep, I took Todd Gurley, might be the best running back in football because he's a great receiver. The Rams run screen passes as well or better than any team I've seen in my 40 years covering the NFL. And then my other one is the one I think will lead the league in rushing for the second time in 3 years, Ezekiel Elliott. And I took those two over like Kareem Hunt, who led the league in rushing last year, Alvin Kamara, who was a great breakaway back. But Gurley and Elliott can't go wrong.
Well, and with Elliott and Gurley, they're not splitting carries the same way Kamara will be, you know, so you're going to have the numbers. Kamara's still going to put up big numbers, though.
But he's not going to lead the league in rushing or all-purpose yards because Gurley will do that for running back.
And you said you did consider Kareem Hunt as well?
I did since he was a third-round pick and he led the league in rushing, but I think anybody would take those first two. Over he and Kamara.
Yeah, I agree. Wide receiver.
Odell Beckham Jr., who's just 25. And then it was really tough. I thought about Michael Thomas of New Orleans, and then I realized Mike Evans from Tampa, huge target, who's been Jameis Winston's favorite receiver. Mike Evans is like 24, so Odell Beckham Jr. and Mike Evans.
Two more I wrote down here. Brandon Cooks, it's hard to believe he's only 24 years old.
Yep.
He's entering his fifth season, but he's averaged around just under 1,000 yards and almost 7 touchdowns per season in those 4 previous seasons.
Yeah,
he's going to explode. He's going to explode in this offense, you would expect, and with the Rams.
Well, he also he's played with Drew Brees,
yeah,
and Tom Brady.
Yep.
And the way the Rams play, he should. He's been very fortunate about the teams and quarterbacks with whom he's played.
And the other one I wrote down, Tyreek Hill, who I don't think a lot of people think of, but he is dynamic. He's more than just a receiver, but as a receiver, he's pretty good. 136 catches, 1,700 career yards, 13 touchdowns.
He is great breakaway threat.
And that's pretty much it, right?
Well, there's a bunch more, but those are the only ones that are worth considering.
And the problem with Hill, Hutton, is just what you said. He's such a do-it-all guy, he doesn't really have one specific fit. Like, I don't think about him as one of the great wide receivers in the league. I think about him as a great
playmaker,
offensive weapon.
Yeah, he's a – yeah.
Get the ball in his hands in a handoff, on a punt return, on a kick return, or, you know, out in space on a screen.
Although they're trying to use him more as a pure wide receiver moving forward. At least they did it towards the end of last year. But, again, he's more of a playmaker, I tend to agree. The other one, John, is Stephon Diggs in Minnesota, 24 years old.
Is he 24? Yeah. But I don't put him in the same class as those two.
Tight ends.
There's several. I took Evan Engram of the Giants, who had a lot of catches last year. Works real well with Eli Manning. With Odell Beckham Jr. out, he really stepped up, and I think it was his second, maybe his third season. But Hayden Hurst,
yeah,
the kid from San Diego who's injured.
Hunter Henry.
David Njoku from Cleveland's another one, but Engram has been the most productive.
All great choices there, and I don't blame you for going with Evan Engram, who is more of just a tall wideout playing tight end. Although I think he's underrated for his blocking abilities. They don't really need him in that area, though. Offensive line is where I would struggle with the age aspect of this question. Let's start with offensive tackle. Who did you come up with?
Ronnie Stanley from the Ravens, former number one pick, and Jack Conklin from the Titans, former number one pick.
Conklin with the All-Pro season his rookie year, coming back from the torn ACL this year. And, yeah, Ronnie Stanley has been money for Baltimore. Another good answer. I can't think of anyone else under the age of 25 that I would want to qualify there.
My next choice would have been Cam Robinson, who started left tackle for the Jaguars last year, drafted to play right tackle, had to move over and played really well.
Now at guard, do you have a rookie listed on your list at offensive guard?
I do,
guard?
Quentin Nelson.
Yeah.
Because I think he's, based on what everybody said, he's the best guard to come in the NFL in a decade or more. And the other one, Trey Turner at Carolina, was in the Pro Bowl. It was hard to find guards. And I found some that were 25 or younger, but since Turner was in the Pro Bowl and played for a playoff team. And then, of course, Nelson, who's supposed to be great. Those were my pair.
And your center?
I took Cody Whitehair of the Bears over Shaq Mason of the Patriots. Could have taken Mason, but Whitehair of the Bears are really pumped about, and they had a better running game than they have a better running game than the Patriots do.
John McClain with us. By doing this, John, I was looking up some names last night. I think it opens your eyes to the players that are on. Most of these guys are on first year contracts, and the money they're making for the actual production they're giving their teams. It's kind of incredible when you think about it.
It is, and one of the things, the first thing I looked at while I was doing it, I looked at the last three Pro Bowl rosters, and then I looked at the first four rounds of the last three drafts, thinking at 16, 17, and 18, because, you know, most teams, there's not a lot of Brandon Cooks. Most guys come into the league now, they're at least 22 years old. So they had to be within their first 4 years. And it was amazing when I went back to 15, how many were older than 25. Like, I was looking for Taylor Lewan, who's 26.
Right.
Yep. Some of them I looked up, I was stunned to realize they're like 28 years old because they haven't been in the league long. And that was because they were 23 or 24 when they came in.
Yeah, Aaron Donald is another example. And we'll get to defense on Thursday.
I definitely looked up him, and he doesn't
26.
Qualify.
That's right. Yeah, and that's why he's holding out, because he knows his value versus his current contractual status with the Rams. John, we go straight to the phones, and we say hello to Bert up on line one. What's up, Bert?
Hello, guys. Hello, John.
Hello, Bert. How are you?
Doing well, thank you very much. John, I just have a comment about Pat Tillman.
Okay.
And the reason I'm bringing this up is that I have a lot of my SI issues, and in particular, the May 3rd issue, 2004. And I just like reading the old stories. But whether you're in high school, college, or the pros, they need to reread that article about Mr. Tillman and what he sacrificed for our country, whether it's okay to kneel or not kneel for our national anthem, the flag, and to see what Pat gave up to defend our values and our flag. After reading that article, they might need to rethink their decisions. Thanks, John.
Remember, they don't kneel because of the anthem, and they don't kneel because of disrespect for the flag. They kneel to protest injustice in America, of which there are many. Now, there's things all the time on the internet, because I retweet all of them, that I see of NFL players doing great things in the community, and they do that. And they have called attention to social injustice. And now we're going to see if this new rule, which is preposterous, that if they don't want to stand for the flag, then they stay in the dressing room. Well, that doesn't help you protest. It's just like at the Olympics 1968 when John Carlos and Tommy Smith held up their fist while they were on the podiums to protest. And it created an incredible controversy. And then through it, and as time went by, people understood more about the issues they were trying to raise. So to have your voice heard, sometimes you have to do unpopular things. And so I can sympathize with them, and also sympathize with the people that don't understand. They see it as just black and white. They see it as an affront to the flag and the military, which it is not intended that way at all. Michael Bennett, who's now with Philadelphia, is with Seattle. He's knelt every game. I know his dad. His dad was in the military. He's proud of what his son does, because his son does all kinds of things off the field during and in the off season in the community. And so it is not going away. The rule that they've made right now is just going to cause even more controversy and take away from the games, and a game that is still great and that people enjoy.
Well, and I totally understand when people say, I don't really understand the route of protest, because now it's changed the message, and it is about the anthem. Regardless of what you want to say, it's not about the anthem. They're doing it during the anthem. So for most Americans, they see it as a protest of the anthem, and that's confusing for a lot of people, and maybe it's not the best way to get your message across. But to play devil's advocate to that call, Pat Tillman and every other service member who died for this country died for the Constitution of this country. And there are a lot of veterans out there who are speaking their mind and saying, I died for the right for NFL players to protest however they want. They died for the right for anyone to protest in any fashion that they want. So that's part of this also. That's part of the rights as an American citizen, whether you agree with it or disagree with it.
Well said, Chad.
Thank you, John.
John, I brought up before the break the comments that Todd Gurley made to TMZ about NFL players wanting fully guaranteed contracts, and if they have a work stoppage in negotiations for the new CBA in 3 years, maybe that accomplishes that. But it got me thinking, what was it like covering the strike in 1987 with the replacement players?
Oh, I covered the one in 1982, my first year, 77. They had a strike for a while. And the thing is, players can talk all they want about guaranteed contracts. But when it comes down to it, when the average career expectancy is still 3.5 years and you're out on strike and those checks aren't coming in, you know, you panic. Your family panics. In 87, some of the top players crossed picket lines. And the Dallas Cowboys had the biggest superstars cross, Randy White, Tony Dorsett. They played Philadelphia during the replacement schedule of 3 games, and they had some of their best players. And the Eagles, Buddy Ryan was the head coach. He told the players, whatever you do, stick together. So their team of scabs beat the Cowboys, and people around the NFL, I'm talking about players, ate it up. And I remember the first time they ever had replacement players. You know, they had a movie about it with Keanu Reeves, in which former Redskins general manager Charlie Casserly was a consultant. The Redskins won Super Bowls after the 82 and 87 seasons when they had player strikes. And what was interesting, the NFL owners are, they're multi-billionaires. They can, canceling a season to a multi-billionaire, while it would bother them, they don't like it, they can withstand it. The players cannot. It's not like other sports where you might play, routinely play 10 years. That's not what it is in the NFL. There's too many of the rank and file that don't make a lot of money, and they need those $500,000-$600,000 paychecks. So there's going to be a lot of rhetoric with people talking like Todd Gurley. Let's see Gurley miss big paychecks after he signs that big contract that's coming up, because the owners are always more well-prepared. That's why the owners run football and the unions run baseball and basketball, because in baseball, you know, they were prepared to go to the mat. You know, they were organized, and they brought the owners to their knees. And now everybody's making record money, and they're making record money in the NFL as well. Other than Kirk Cousins, though, the contracts are not fully guaranteed.
John, how did the Redskins have that level of success with their replacement players?
They cheated during the when you was on strike. They practiced illegally. Everybody knows they did. My wife, who's a diehard Redskins fan, goes ballistic. She said, "Well, maybe if the Oilers had cheated, they would have won." I said, "No, they were too bad. They could have practiced double days every day, and it wouldn't have mattered." And so they did. They did what they should do. They were ready to go when they resumed play.
But even the replacement players won, right? Weren't they like 4-0 or 5-0? Their replacement players were better than the rest of the league.
Yeah, they just got Super Bowl rings.
They played 3 games. I can't remember what the records were. I remember the Oilers' replacement players.
Pretty sure they were 3-0.
What's weird, you guys were asking about stories. Because the replacement players are scabs, came from every walk of life, they're not unionized, so they made them have 3 a day practices, and they treated them like dogs, and that wasn't counting the mental stuff that they had to learn a system. And I remember the Oiler veteran players, when they pulled up on the street and their buses throwing eggs and beer bottles and whatever they could get at the buses, and then standing on a railroad track that was by the practice field, lined up just screaming at these players while they're trying to concentrate, just screaming at them. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. And the first game, this is one of the most unbelievable things I've ever been involved in. The Oilers' first game is Denver. Protesters with the AFL-CIO said they were going to target that game in that stadium, and they expected violence. And I rode on a bus with one of the team buses, which I never do. We had 2 armed guards on the front 2 seats. We went under overpasses with police with machine guns and rifles on each of those overpasses. And then, of course, they got to Mile High Stadium and nothing happened, and the Oilers won. And a guy named Eugene Seal, a 5'10", 266-pound inside linebacker who'd been running a jackhammer on a construction site, made the team, and he was defensive player of the week because of his performance in the Oilers' victory in Denver.
Love the stories with John McClain. We'll have more of them on Thursday this week. He'll join us this Thursday. John, thank you as always, and we'll catch up with you in a couple of days.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you very much as always.
Yep, John McClain, twice a week with us, right here on the Midday 180.